Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we have two great guests. First, Don McPherson will return from Modern Survey. He's going to be talking about the Fall 2014 State of Engagement Report. They do this bi-yearly, and this report is going to be some interesting information that I know you're going to want to hear about. Second, Bud Bernstein comes back, and he's going to talk about the 2015 HR events. That's right. Already it's happening. We're going to be talking about Strategic HR Convention. We're going to be talking about the Main HR Convention, and we're going to be talking about Comp Summit. That's at mainhr.com. And we are talking today with Don McPherson, and he's back. That's right. He's back from Modern Survey, and he's going to be talking today about engagement in the U.S. He's got a new survey out here in November 2014. New survey just came out. We're going to be talking about it because here it's December 2014 already, and some great stuff to talk about in terms of engagement. Don, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, David. It's a pleasure.
No, it's great. You know, last time we talked, actually, you had done a survey earlier in the year, and you had said that engagement was improving. So what are the results of the new survey?
Unbelievably, engagement is at the highest point that we've seen it, and we've been measuring engagement of the U.S. workforce since 2007. So levels of full engagement are at 16%. So 16% of all U.S. workers are fully engaged, and that's up from just 13% as of March of this year. And remarkably, it's double the level that it was 3 years ago. So imagine in 2011, only 8% of the U.S. workforce was fully engaged. So we're continually trending in the right direction, and the state of engagement is very positive right now.
No, that's great. Now, you know, I have to ask the question. That would say, though, that, what, 84% is not engaged? I just have to ask the question.
Your math is accurate, and I should say that it's really, really difficult to be a fully engaged employee, but all of the other things are trending as in the right way as well. So the level of disengagement is at 22%. So almost a quarter of all U.S. workers are disengaged, and these are people who show up every day, and they're fairly miserable at work. They do the minimum to get by, and I think most of us would agree that 22% of our employees being disengaged is absolutely unacceptable. And I would state the same thing as well, but let me just give you a frame of reference here.
Sure.
18 months ago, it was 32%. So it was a third of the workforce, nearly. And so we are trending in the right direction in terms of levels of disengagement as well. We can do much better, and many of the organizations that we work with are much, much better than the 22%, but that's where we are as a country right now.
Obviously, we're talking about there are always going to be people that are fully engaged, and there are always going to be people that are fully disengaged. That's probably a reality. It's kind of like there will never be true, full employment. That's just not going to happen. It's always going to be unemployment. There's always going to be people that are not engaged. But it is really good to see the trends heading in the right direction. What are some of the reasons behind the numbers and what you're seeing and why this trend is moving in that direction?
I think there are a couple of reasons for it. And the first reason is that there are just more opportunities out there. And so if you are disengaged, 3-4 years ago, when unemployment was 7-8%, there weren't as many opportunities out there, and so you probably had to suck it up and say, you know what, I'm going to stay with what I know. I'm not happy here. I'm not doing my best work, but it's safe, it's secure, and I have a paycheck. Well, unemployment is under 6% now, and it continues to tick down, and companies are hiring at a much higher rate. And therefore, many of those disengaged employees who have been disengaged over the past 2 or 3 years, they're getting opportunities with new employers. And they're excited about those new opportunities. So that's one of the reasons why, is just there's kind of a musical chairs type thing going on where disengaged and underengaged employees are finding new opportunities. And I think the other thing is the number of millennials who are coming into the workforce and finding their first job, and they're bringing some enthusiasm and excitement to the workplace. And these two things are helping push engagement levels to higher rates. And I think it's really exciting if you're an employer or if you're a leader to see this energy and enthusiasm come back into the workplace.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. If you look at recruiting across the country today, all measures are showing, whether it's in the search area or the staffing area, they're showing huge increases. So it is good that people who are disengaged and not happy at a workplace move to someplace where they are. This is a good thing for both the employer and the employee. I mean, this is a positive. There are opportunities now that you're absolutely correct were not there even a year ago. If I look at our business at CMA, we are seeing a huge increase in recruiting. All the people we talk to across the organizations, whether it be at NAPS, the organization, or NEEP, some of the organizational groups that are out there for recruiting, which would tell you it is just skyrocketing because the opportunities are now happening.
Yeah, and I think people understand that, too. And if you look at some of the other data that we've collected on this study, more people are looking, too. So there are not only more opportunities, but the people who have jobs now know that there are more opportunities, and they're looking at a much higher rate as well. And, you know, I shared some information with you before our interview here. 23% of the U.S. workforce was currently looking for a job in 2012 when we did the study. Last year it was bumped up to 25%. Now it's 28%. And the thing that's really remarkable about this is that normally when somebody has a high level of engagement, whether they're fully engaged or moderately engaged according to our terms, they're typically not looking for work elsewhere. But that's not the case now. A quarter of the people who are fully engaged are currently looking. And that's something that we need to be aware of as HR professionals and as business leaders to make sure our fully engaged employees don't look elsewhere. You have stay interviews with them. You discuss what they want in terms of career development and how they want to be recognized and what they need to stay with your organization. So just because levels of engagement are trending up doesn't mean you can sit back and say, we've got this thing licked. We're in good shape right now. You need to have conversations with employees at all levels of engagement.
You know, back in March, you talked a lot about the change in terms of monetary demands have increased in terms of importance, right? I think it was going from, if I remember, 8th or 9th up to 6th or 7th. Have you seen any changes in the overall flow in terms of what people are still finding are importance in terms of engagement in this survey?
Yeah, so when we did talk last time, pay and compensation was one of the stronger drivers. Normally it shows up in 8th or 9th place, and I think last time we talked it was in 5th or 6th place, so it was creeping up, and then satisfaction with pay was falling, so that was kind of a double whammy that we had to look out for. It was becoming more important, and yet people were kind of complaining about it. It's not even registering right now, which is really remarkable to me. There's really two things that are driving engagement far stronger than anything else. The first would be confidence in the company and confidence in senior leadership. Those things together, just in general, it's confidence. People want to know that their organization is headed in the right direction and it's being led by the right people. And then the second thing that's driving engagement is career development. So that's showing up as the second strongest driver of engagement, and it makes sense if you think about the battle scars that we experienced during the recession. People gravitated towards safety and security, so they wanted this confidence, and at the same time, they wanted to improve their skills, so if their organization didn't stick around or if their organization decided they wanted to lay people off, at least they had the skills necessary, the employees had the skills necessary to find their next opportunity. So when I'm working with a client, generally speaking, these are the things that we're finding. People want that confidence in their leadership, confidence in the company, and then selfishly they want those development opportunities. So if things fall apart, they have opportunities elsewhere.
Well, I do think, and I agree, that when you're, what we're seeing is companies more alert and aware of their employees looking, and that they are now starting to do some of the development and training programs, executive coaching, which again is another huge area of spike we're seeing in the marketplace today. Because really they're realizing they cut to the bone for the last few years. And now they're beginning to hire, and there's talent out there, but you have to go find great talent. A lot of that talent will be hired no matter a recession or whether it's, you know, the boom times, as I like to say. Good people always get hired. So when they're looking for this great talent, they now realize they have to keep them. They need to have succession plans. They need to have career development plans. And I agree 100%. I think your survey says that, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And I think you bring up a really, really important point here, is that high potential and high performing employees have opportunities regardless of the economy. And there is going to be a fight for these employees. And so if you know who your high potential, high performing employees are, and you should, if you're in HR or if you're a CEO or an executive, you ought to know who those folks are. They are the ones who want those career development opportunities the most, and those are the ones, those are the employees who frankly deserve it the most, and it's absolutely critical. And I say that they want it the most because confidence in the organization is probably not all, as important to them. They understand what type of performer they are. They understand what their potential is, and so they're going to gravitate more toward the development side of things as opposed to, is this a safe organization? Is our leadership team the right team to lead us into the future? So that's why I would say, if you know high performers in your organization, high potentials in your organizations, you need to have conversations, very candid conversations about their career development opportunities and what they want.
Yeah, and I think that's even more important now today, where you've seen a flattening of the organization. You're seeing less levels, right? So they don't necessarily, or may not necessarily, see their next move, their next career step. Or they may think that somebody who has been there a while might block them, right? Block their move to the next level. And that is going to make them make some decisions on whether they're going to stay or go, and I think that will be reflective in the numbers in the future.
Yes, I think so too, and I want to clarify one thing about career development, because a lot of people see that as just being ascending within the organization, and I don't look at it solely as that. I think about, if you think about the workforce in total, about a third of employees want to move up, and they want to move up fairly rapidly. So, you know, on a shorter runway, maybe 6 months, maybe a year time frame. But the rest of the workforce, about two-thirds, they want to expand their skills. They want to master what they're doing right now. And again, it comes down to having very candid conversations about with employees about what they want, what the future looks like for them, how, what career development is, what their definition of career development is, and if it's ascending within the organization or if it's just expanding skills that are going to make them more valuable to the organization in their current position.
We're talking with Don McPherson. He's the president of Modern Survey, and of course we've had him multiple times on the show. We're talking about the 2014 November survey that has just come out by his organization, talking about engagement at some of the highest levels ever reported in terms of the survey since 2007. One of the things in the report that I read was building a culture of trust. And you talk about here that research indicates that 95% of fully engaged employees say they trust their direct manager. It is connected to the individual, isn't it? It's not always the full organization, because people work for people.
They do. Trust is one of those things that we call gateways to engagement. There are three gateways to engagement. People need to be paid fairly. they need to work for organizations that have values and that values are known and understood. And then the last piece is trust. And like you mentioned, 95% of fully engaged employees say they trust senior leadership and they say they trust their direct managers. In the absence of trust, engagement is almost impossible. You absolutely have to love your work to be fully engaged in an organization or working for a leader you don't trust. So it's that important. Unfortunately, most of us, the vast majority of people, do trust their managers and do trust senior leadership. But without it, forget about it. You're not going to have high levels of engagement on your team or in your organization if trust is absent.
Yeah, I think it's important when you're talking about some nonprofit organizations. I certainly have seen with a mission, right? The core of the mission is so important to individuals that sometimes they'll overlook a bad manager or necessarily an organization that's not necessarily well structured or well put together because their drive for that mission drives them almost more than that. But at some point, they will give up and then say, okay, I've had enough.
You're right. I think there's a fatigue factor in there. You know, the mission is going to keep you only so long, but if there's dysfunction, if there's mistrust, if the organization doesn't have values, if your leader is saying one thing and doing another thing, that's going to erode the affinity that you have with that mission. And for every employee, it's going to be a different time frame, but do you want to minimize the erosive type of behaviors or environment that that is present in the organization? So, you know, just and one of the interesting things about trust is people can make promises and think that they're going to fulfill the promise, but if they don't do it in the time frame that they promised, it's still eroding the trust that the employee has for that manager, that leader. And so if you eventually do what you say you're going to do, that's great. You might think that you're fulfilling your commitment, but if you don't do it within the time frame, you still are creating kind of an environment where mistrust might be felt.
No, I understand completely. You know, as you mentioned earlier, Gen Y is one of the areas where we're seeing the brightest spark, right? They are probably the most engaged, and based on what I'm seeing on the report, 19% of Gen Y is fully engaged, where Gen X is around 14 and Boomers around 15, thus coming up with a number of 16%. Why do you see Gen Y right now so engaged? Is it because they're new to the workforce and they have that, what I would call, new enthusiasm that's coming through?
I think that's absolutely right. I think that they are new to the workplace and they have what I call enthusiasm. And it's up to leaders and HR professionals to turn that enthusiasm into long-term engagement. And so, yeah, they're approaching their work with this high level of enthusiasm. They're excited about it. They're learning new things. They see a bright future for themselves. And so, yes, they're more apt to be fully engaged. And I think the interesting thing about the millennials as we look at the data is just how they define things. And so a year ago, we looked at those millennials who said that they intended to stay with their organization a long time. And then we asked them, well, how long is a long time? And half of those people said that a long time was 2 years or less. And so it's really interesting when we look at their engagement levels to look at how they define things. And again, it comes down to having one-on-one conversations with all employees and learning what these different things, drivers of engagement, mean to them. What does recognition mean to you? Because I know that recognition to a millennial, they may expect it a little bit more frequently than my generation, Gen X, or a baby boomer might. I think that career development is going to mean different things depending on your age. And so a good leader is going to have conversations with each of their employees about what their definition, what an employee's definition of a personal accomplishment or belief in the future of the organization, recognition, any of these drivers of engagement. That's an important, important activity for a leader to have.
We're talking with Don McPherson. He is the president of Modern Survey. He's talking to us about the 2014 November survey that just came out. It's actually called the Fall 2014 survey, the State of Employee Engagement. One of the things that I saw, which I thought was interesting in your survey, had to do with engagement levels by industry. And there were four industries that were at 16% or better. And I got to be honest with you, I was surprised with the highest level one, which was heavy manufacturing was at 19% are fully engaged, hospitality 18, financial services 17, healthcare 16. I mean, heavy manufacturing, I must confess, surprised me. Why do you think you're seeing that in such a, what I would say is a very traditional industry?
Frankly, it surprised me too. And we started tracking this about 3 years ago, and heavy manufacturing was not at the top. Financial services was at the top. But heavy manufacturing has trended upward, I think, for two reasons. Number one, it was really heavily hit by the recession. And so I think people's expectations for the industry were really, really low, particularly employees who worked in the industry. And so they had kind of a low benchmark or a low bar over which to cross. And since the recession, the industry has had a bit of a renaissance in the U.S. And I think the other reason that we're seeing heavy manufacturing scoring so well and having so many fully engaged employees is they're hiring really good and well-paying jobs. And a lot of the employees who are working in heavy manufacturing now are pretty highly educated or technically savvy. And so the types of jobs that there are in heavy manufacturing now are quite a bit different than 30, 40 years ago. And so for those two reasons, one is how far it's come since the recession and the types of jobs that it's hiring right now are two of the reasons why heavy manufacturing shows up at the top.
So hospitality is the one under it, and then financial services and healthcare. I certainly healthcare is one that certainly has been under a lot of pressure in the last couple of years, having to do with certainly the Affordable Care Act and all the consolidations, having to do with hospitals and just the medical industry in general. So I was, again, surprised to see that at standard. But hospitality also surprised me. What do you think is in those numbers?
I was surprised by hospitality as well. And if you think about hospitality, the interesting thing is it's kind of bipolar in that lots of fully engaged employees, but lots of disengaged employees as well. Almost 30% of hospitality employees are disengaged, and 18% of them are fully engaged. So it's almost like you either absolutely love it, you love working with the public, you love serving people, or you absolutely hate it. And so that's one of the very few industries where you see that, just kind of a love-hate relationship with the industry. And incidentally, we just had a hotel chain, a client of ours, a hotel chain, go through their employee survey, and I was blown away at how outstanding their results were. And so in the right environment, hospitality employees can thrive. And I think there are some outstanding organizations that allow their employees to thrive and allow their employees to really connect with the people who they're serving on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I was going to talk about the disengagement level because, you know, while heavy manufacturing is doing really well, light manufacturing is getting crushed. I mean, 30% disengagement in the industry. What's the big shift on that?
I think it's just the types of education levels and types of people that those different industries are attracting. I think light manufacturing, you have lower levels of education, lower pay, certainly. And for those reasons, you're having really high levels of disengagement. You've got 30% of all light manufacturing employees who are disengaged versus only 14% of light manufacturing employees who are fully engaged. And it really comes down to the type of work that they're doing and the type of employees who are filling those particular jobs.
You know, we've talked a lot about some industries, but one of the highlights is about salespeople. And in the report, you're talking about salespeople are significantly more engaged than non-salespeople. Do you think that's because of the compensation or because of the freedom? Or what are some of the highlights behind those numbers?
Well, I'm a sales guy, so I'm going to say that.
So you were basically the report. Is that what you're telling me? You're the guy, the one guy interviewed for that report. Okay, I got it now. No, go ahead.
No, I'm just thinking that if you are gravitating towards sales as a career, you're pretty much going to be a self-starter. You're pretty much going to understand that. You have to be energetic. You have to be positive. And therefore, you're going to be more likely to be fully engaged. And that's what we found in the data. 42% of salespeople were either fully engaged or moderately engaged. And that compared to 24% of both of those categories for non-salespeople. So they were far more likely to be fully engaged. And I think it's just a personality type and personality trait for people who choose sales as a career.
No, I think you're probably right in terms of understanding why. You know, one of the other areas that I wanted to talk about with you, and because I think it's an important trend, is about social media. And one of the things you talk about is you predict that social media will be used not only as an attractor of talent acquisition tool, but as a retention tool. The report shows high level of use in terms of platforms from Facebook especially, right? 77%, LinkedIn's around 38%, and then you've got Twitter and Google Plus and Instagram kind of in there and all the others. Where are you seeing this trend for retention? Because I do know companies are hesitant to use some of these platforms other than for either sales or promotional or maybe to kind of engage employees in a light way, but are nervous to put stuff out on the web.
Well, if you remember back to the late 90s, when I was at American Express and I was working for a Fortune 500 company, the internet was banned as a tool in many organizations. It was not at American Express, but I know that was a common thing at large organizations or at any organization. They banned the internet. And a handful of years ago, social media sites were banned within companies, and people said, well, you probably shouldn't bring your phone to work because you're going to be texting all the time. Well, it's common. It's every organization allows the internet now, and every individual is able to bring their device to work if they want to. That's what's going to happen to social media. Social media is going to become a tool that businesses use on a regular basis. And we're using it in recruiting right now. We're using it to express our employment brand and to use it for attracting new hires and candidates to our pipeline. But mark my words, companies are going to use it for communicating to their employees about where the organization is going. Remember, confidence in senior leadership and confidence in the future of the organization, those are two top drivers of employee engagement. And the biggest issue that we hear from executives and CEOs is communicating to their employees when they're geographically dispersed or when they're working in a heavy manufacturing environment or hospitality or retail. Well, everybody has a phone. And everybody has a smartphone, and they can access these tools, these social media tools. And so this is going to be the way that leaders communicate where the organization is going, and that's how they're going to get their messages to employees. It may not be next year, but in the next 2 or 3 years, this is how many, many organizations will be communicating to their employees what the future of the organization looks like. And we're seeing high levels of transparency already. We've got one very large telecom company. Their CEO is on Twitter constantly telling their employees where the organization is going. And he's just an advocate for it. And we see other organizations following suit. And we know that this is the future of how we communicate with our employees. And if people are really hesitant and they think that it's going to be too transparent, well, sites like Yammer that are closed to outside people, and so you can set permissions for who gets access to what information.
No, that's true. And I think, you know, as social media evolves, right, over the next few years, gosh knows what it's going to look like even 2 years from now. The, you know, sites pop up all the time. And who would have known that, you know, the sites that are so popular today, who are not that old, by the way, when you really look at it, are really making big pushes and strides. And there will be ones that come out just focused on employers, as you just mentioned. That's going to happen. So, you know, as we wrap up here today, talking about the state of employee engagement here in the fall of 2014, what are two or three takeaways that employers can really think about as to what they can do in the next 6 months to really continue to drive home this engagement and continue to push it up? But let's see if we can get it to 17, 18, maybe even 20% by March of 2015. What are you seeing? What is the organization really thinking about? What are you helping people do to make that happen?
Well, I love your enthusiasm for it. I'd love to see it be 20% nationally, and I don't think that that's an outrageous goal. I think we can certainly do that. A couple of things. One, as our research says, if you are not communicating what your organizational values are, then you're not going to have high levels of engagement. People who say they know and understand their organization's values, they're 51 times more likely to be fully engaged. The absence of values, just like the absence of trust, makes full engagement almost impossible. So that's the first thing. The second thing is tell employees where the organization is headed. Give them a roadmap for how you're going to get there, and let the individual know how they can help the organization attain its goals. Confidence in the future of the organization, that's what people want. They want that safety and security. Second, have conversations with employees about their career development opportunities. Understand if they want to ascend within the organization or if they want to just get better at what they're currently doing. And then the third thing is, make sure your employees understand that engagement is their responsibility as well. People sit back and think that their manager is responsible for how engaged they are. Well, that's not true. And if you're in an organization where you're letting employees off the hook, you're only half as effective in getting your employees engaged. As strong and as effective as your leaders are, that's all of the heavy lifting that your organization is doing in order to get employees engaged. But when employees understand that they're responsible for engagement as well, then you've got the thing solved. You've got the nut cracked.
You know, I think this has been another great conversation because you're bringing real-life data that people can really look at and sink their teeth into. I love the survey. I love you guys doing it. I appreciate you being on the show. Don, thanks again. And when people want to go and know more about this or get this survey data in their hands, where exactly do they need to go?
There are two places where people can find this information. One is you can simply go to modernsurvey.com, or if they want to see the data specifically, they can go to modernsurvey.com/fall2014.
Perfect. Thank you very, very much for being on the show today. I appreciate it so much, and I look forward to talking to you soon again, maybe in March of 2015.
Always a pleasure, David. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour. Today we're going to be talking with our good friend and guest, Bud Bernstein. He is the head of New England Law Publishers, which produces the HR Main Convention, the Strategic HR Convention up in New Hampshire, and also the Comp Summit. So three great events that have happened in 2014 and actually been happening for years. But we're going to be talking about what's happening in 2015, the successes of 2014, and just have an all-around good topic of conversation with Bud. So, Bud, welcome to the show.
Hey, David, thank you, and almost a Happy New Year to you.
You're absolutely correct. It is almost that time. You know, it's interesting as we talk about some of the conventions that have happened for 2014. I got to tell you, you know, I've been going to these events now for about 5 years, and I got to tell you, this was probably one of the strongest years that I have seen in terms of the conventions, both from a main HR perspective and certainly from a strategic convention. What do you see as the driving force that continues to build upon this success?
Well, easy answer and true answer is a fabulous audience that kind of inspires us. The other thing that maybe has changed over the last couple of years is I've been doing some reading and studying of people who work in the artistic field and who are curators at museums and for universities and for other sources. And I've started thinking a little differently about what works on a stage here versus there, and how you mix and match programs when you're running concurrent sessions. So I think it's a great audience and maybe a little bit more creativity on our part.
Well, it is an element of theater as well as learning, isn't it? There is a connection between engaging the audience and keeping them looking for more, right, as well as providing incredible world-class content.
Yeah, there's something to that, and some of the great fun my team has and our friends have is they're helping us discover speakers. Or, you know, we get to spend our evenings with popcorn watching TED Talks and 99U Talks and various things that are really at our disposal now because of the Internet. And we just find some of the most amazing people and then figure out some clever way to convince them to come to Maine or New Hampshire to join our stage.
Yeah, I think it's made a difference. I mean, it's certainly in the last couple of years, some of the people you've brought in are going to be bringing back, which we'll talk about in terms of some of the conventions that's happening this year, have really made a difference in terms of their impact to the audience. You can hear it when you're at the convention. You can hear them talking about the excitement that it's driven. Do you see that energy continuing to build?
Yeah, one of the things we do, not only are we curating these events more realistically now, we're working with the speakers in advance to make sure they get in-house for a day or two before they're actually going on stage. So, you know, I guess in the business world you call it breaking down the silos. Well, that way they are familiar with what we're all about, and more important, they are familiar with the people in the audience. They've had a chance to chat with them, see what will make their presentations really sparkle on stage.
Yeah, I know it's always important when you have a speaker that understands the audience, right? They can connect better, and they can really bring forward examples and things that are relevant rather than just general topics in whole.
Yeah. You saw a few of them just a couple weeks ago when you were with us at the Mount Washington Hotel. I've got my three favorites, and I think I even asked you who your favorites were, and I think you liked Margaret Heffernan, as I recall.
Absolutely, she was fantastic. You could go down through and say, you know, anybody really connected with the audience. There wasn't really a disconnect. You know, certainly there are some that are more, if you want to call it, entertaining, and there are topics that are always more interesting to each individual person. That's natural.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they all connected well in terms of the audience that was there.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see it going in 2015? What are some of the things that, and we're going to go down by each, you know, venue here shortly, but where do you see some of the direction for 2015 coming?
Well, first of all, for the main HR convention, we're celebrating our 20th year, so it's going to be a big anniversary party. But putting that aside, for content, I think we're going to further just what we said, that we're trying to drive world-class speakers to our stage, convince them to come to Maine, New Hampshire, and perhaps some other venues in the region. And second, we're trying to get them to tie into our theme of making a difference. That's been our thing for a few years. I guess, in a sense, it's not different, but we're just pushing a little more, because when HR functions well, the rest of the organization thrives. And, you know, the professionals in our audience are so well-positioned. They don't always know it, but they are so well-positioned to make a difference in the business direction, strategic planning of their organization, and in the lives of their employees, and maybe even more important, indirectly in the lives of the communities in which these employers thrive and provide a paycheck.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, one of the things that I've been asked, and certainly you may have heard of, is a lot of the things happening with SHRM today. And from a macro perspective, I know that there are people that are asking about credits having to do with their PHR, their SPHR, their GPHR, and now these new SHRM credits that are going to be needed. Do you see any changes happening with the convention this year or anything so that individuals will know in 2015 they'll still be able to get credits as they need for their certifications?
Yeah, and maybe not all the audience is aware, but SPHR and PHR are the designations and certifications that have been in the industry for quite a long time, and now there's a new kid on the block. Well, really, from an old kid on the block, SHRM is offering their own designations now. So there are two sets, and there are two slightly different standards for how these recertifications are awarded for both organizations. SHRM's being new, we don't fully have all the information yet on what's required for recertification, but it looks like a format that we can easily comply with. And so I suspect, with a 99.9% degree of certainty, that our programs will be offering recertification credits both for SPHR and PHRs through the HRCI format and for the new SHRM credits as well.
No, that's great, because I think that that's, you know, some of the questions that have come out, and I've been to some events where they're explaining all this, and it's fine. I understand that the organizations change and they morph and they decide what they're going to do. But I think from a convention standpoint or an event standpoint, I think people just want to know that they're still going to be able to get what they need, whether it be they take one or the other or both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think this is going to play out over a few years. There's obviously a little bit of stress in the community about these new designations and how they relate to the old ones. So people are still figuring things out. It's the old, you know, change isn't always easy kind of concept, and that change may or may not be fully defined yet. But, you know, our attendees or folks who are thinking of going can rest assured that we will do everything possible to get them the credits they need for their professional designations.
That's great. We're talking, of course, with Bud Bernstein, and he, of course, runs the main HR convention, the Strategic HR New England Convention, and the Workers' Comp Summit here in Maine and New Hampshire. So let's start with the big one, the next one coming, the 20-year anniversary of the Maine HR Convention on May 5 through 8, 2015, at the Samerset Resort in Rockport, Maine.
Wow.
Bud, well, I mean, I got all the deal here. We're ready. We're excited. I know we're going to be there. I know you're going to be there. Tell us what are some of the exciting fun things.
Aren't you good? You're on the program faculty.
I am on the faculty this year. I know. I know. I wrote something up and you liked it. I mean, that's really...
Yeah, well, you're actually doing one of our new directions at this conference. We're adding some what we're calling solution centers at the lunch hour. They're a little more informal, but they're meant to get directly to a point of interest where people can gather with an expert and deal with a subject matter specific to their needs. And in your case, I think it has something to do with some interesting recruiting techniques that you and your pal Rick Dacry have.
That's exactly correct. We are going to be partnering together on talking about recruiting techniques. I appreciate you bringing that up, but it's, and we're excited.
I know you're not the only one. It is a 56 person faculty.
Oh, it's wonderful,
so
though. I'm excited.
There are 54 other folks, of whom about 45 have been chosen. So we don't have every last piece in place, but most of them are. And boy, there's some really good stuff about to happen. I just turned the staff loose, my friends loose, my partner Mark loose at home, and I found this speaker on my own. I started, and I called Mark and said, wow, I found this woman. She's been an executive and chief legal counsel for Starbucks in Seattle for 10 or 12 years. She's now forming a rhythm and blues band, and she used to work for Dell Computers, and she's jumped out of airplanes for the Army and Navy. He told me, he said, oh, are you talking about Paula Boggs from Seattle? I said, oh, did you just find her yourself online? He said, no, went to school with her. So,
oh my gosh,
it was just
really?
That little connection, and we have this amazing woman coming to talk about career development and a very interesting path she has chosen that might pertain to us. So kind of fun.
No, that's going to be fantastic, and that's a very interesting topic, and she's going to be great, I'm sure.
Yeah, and someone we've been looking at for a while, Janine Emsick from Omaha, is going to join us. And She started in HR in Chicago way back when, but she's had kind of an interesting path since, from teaching in Burma to founding a university in war-torn Republic of the Congo in Africa. And she's just a real visionary. She's going to talk to us about ethics and the power of walking your talk. So that's going to be some great fun. The one other thing we've added, too, is I think you saw it in the beginnings of what we were doing at the strategic conference in New Hampshire, which we'll talk about in a little while. But I'm trying to bring in a team of HR superstars from around the country to come and talk and inspire people about the work they do that might be a little different than the work we do day-to-day here. So I have Joy Rothschild, who is the Chief Human Resources Officer of Omni Hotels out of Dallas, coming. You saw
her. Yeah, she was fabulous.
Wasn't she great?
She was fabulous.
Yeah, and we paired her with Giovanni Twigg from IDEX here in Westbrook.
Yes.
And many of your listeners probably have seen at least pictures of IDEX's spectacular New World campus. I've had the tour. It really blows you away what they've done there. So he's going to kind of give us a tour and tell us about how they've partnered with Intermed, for example, to provide some amazing quality health care on site to their employees, or how they've partnered with a local health and wellness center that set up shop within, or you know, how they offer cooking classes or tend to the gardens outside the building. So it will be really good stuff.
No, that's fabulous. I mean, I think it's always great when we can hear about innovative ideas, right? That's what this is about, innovative ideas, about learning about new ways. I mean, that's what makes this convention so exciting. So give us a tease before we end here on the HR convention part, the main HR convention. What's the big 20 thing going to happen, bud? Come on, we want to know.
Well, we don't have all the pieces in place. We just know this. If you're in the audience, there are going to be some amazing big prizes given away every day. We're not going to turn this into a game show, but we just figured there's really a need to celebrate the wonderful people, many of whom have been with us for all 20 years. So,
no, you're absolutely right.
Back when my hair was black.
And now it's just pure white, right?
Yeah, something like that.
We're talking with Bud Bernstein from Law Publishers and the main HR convention, Strategic HR New England Convention and Workers' Comp Summit. The next one that's coming up after that is the Workers' Comp Summit, and that again is at the Samerset Resort in Rockport. It's going to be from August 30th to September 1st, 2015. Bud, what's happening with Comp Summit in 2015?
Well, this is the annual, and it's in its 22nd or 23rd year, annual workers' comp conference for the state of Maine. And it's a bit different than most other workers' comp programs that exist in the other states, in that it plays to all segments of the workers' comp audience. So if you went to Idaho, you might see there's a conference for the attorneys that handle comp, or there may be a separate conference for the medical community or the administrators or the insurers or the employers. In our case, we try to bring everyone together under one roof, under the billing of a collaborative approach to workers' comp. It's a system that is a legal system, and within that there's some inherent conflicts, and there always will be in individual cases and in the direction of the comp system in the state. But we try to present a civil forum for people who are on opposing sides of the fence when it comes to a particular case or workers' comp in general, to be under a roof for 2 or 3 days to get to know each other better and to listen to some quality speakers, help them try to think of some new ways to deal with workplace injuries, the impact on individual employees' lives, the impact on the businesses in which they work. And we're very lucky that in this endeavor to have the executive director of the Workers' Comp Board, Paul Signolfi, be an active participant, both in the concept and in the specific nature of the programming. So that really helps make a difference for us.
No, it's a unique conference. It's well done. I've certainly been there a couple of times. I think it is a strong format for this event. And it certainly is something that is different, that is not what is done in other places. You know, as we talk about the last conference of the year that you have together, it's the Strategic HR New England Conference. This, of course, is up at the Omni Mount Washington Hotel in Brenton Woods, New Hampshire. It's going to be on October 27th through 29th in 2015. But I don't know how you build upon last year's event. It was really, 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 really good.
Yeah, this conference is sort of the new kid on the block for us. The others are in their 20s. We're just heading into year four here, and so it's, you know, it's sort of the new passion in the office, and we will find a way to make it better. It is a little early in the process to announce a full lineup, but, you know, believe it or not, we've already landed a couple of unique speakers, and that's what we try to do here. This is different from our other conferences, and it's very different from most strategic HR and business conferences around the country, both in terms of the setting and the way it's set up. So imagine a three-day event where you go away to a fabulous retreat. You know, you can still get phone calls in. It's not that remote, but that you start out with a day of big ideas on the stage, then you work through strategies the next day, and then the final day is just the bring-it-home tips and techniques so that the value of the conference comes home with you. So that's the way we're driving that. And we try to bring in some of the speakers who might be a bit beyond the normal pale of HR. So, for instance, we have already signed up a Jarrett Krasoska. You can check out a fabulous TED Talk he's done. He's the author of a children's book series called The Lunch Ladies. And believe it or not, it ties directly into HR and the value of human beings and the value of a good job and the value of respect and dignity.
No, that's amazing. I think it's going to be so much fun. This conference has so much excitement and building upon it. I mean, I just, as I said before, it's probably one of the better conferences I've been, bar none, across the last few years that I've gone to these conferences. That doesn't mean the others haven't been great, but it just really connected with the audience, and the buzz was fabulous.
Oh, thank you, David.
You know, I tell you, you guys got a great team there at MaineHR.com, and I would encourage everyone, by the way, to go to MaineHR.com to check out all three conferences. But you have a great team. You have Heather, of course, your marketing and PR director. You have DJ, faculty liaison, Becky, your human resource and office manager, and Chanel, of course, the 21st century liaison. A great team you've pulled together. You know, tell me a little about how important it is that your team connects with the audience themselves.
Well, it's kind of critical. We're not your ordinary business. We were just talking about this yesterday at a staff meeting, but imagine you were at a workplace where all your hopes and dreams and your strategic planning and your implementation and your creative energy and the rollout and the financial results and the reputation you build, all of that is based on 11 days of activity during the course of the year. So we have just this amazing amount of pressure on us, and the only way you can pull that off in a small organization of five or six people is to have some really great people with different talents, which we certainly have, but more important, to have these great partnerships with other businesses, with the HR community, with the SHRM chapters, with our business partners. And somehow, with the help of people like Heather Bassett and the rest of our team, we've been able to pull that off. By the way, no one can steal any of these employees away from us, David.
Of course not. They're very dedicated. There's no question to it, and I know them all personally. They're all great people. You know, I got to tell you, it's been great talking with you again today. MaineHR.com is the place to go. We appreciate you guys as a sponsor of the HR Power Hour. I encourage everyone to go check out the Maine HR Convention, the Strategic HR New England Convention, and the Workers' Comp Summit coming up for 2015. Bud, thank you for being on the show.
David, a pleasure as always.
Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.